From WFSU Public Media, Happy New Year. Welcome to the New Year's very first Perspectives program. I'm Tom Flanagan, and you know, if we've learned anything from the COVID pandemic, it is to never say never, because after a brief return to our traditional live in-studio format during the closing months of 2021, guess what? The latest viral surge has prompted us, in an abundance of caution and also with the full concurrence of the participants, to return to a pre-recorded Zoom situation for at least a little bit. So this program, using the Zoom platform, was pre-recorded on Wednesday, January the 5th. Well, a new year is certainly an opportunity for new beginnings. And when those new beginnings may provide additional help in solving old problems, so much the better. The perennial problem we're talking about today is the scourge of human trafficking, and it continues to be certainly an international plague, but also with particularly pernicious connections to Florida, including our own area of North Florida. So to delve into that connection and also talk about some new initiatives in combating human trafficking, we have a really outstanding panel with us to get into that today. So let's go around and introduce them. First, we say hello and welcome to Marcia Crowell with Capital City Bank. She's really been instrumental in helping the bank for which she works to receive a lot of human trafficking training. All the staff there also knows a great deal about how and why the financial sector has to be fully informed about trafficking, because it is so much used by those who are involved in this horror. Marcia joined Capital City Bank back in June of 2018, and she brings more than 40 years of prior experience in the areas of bank compliance and banking operations to the task. Marcia, welcome to Perspectives. It is so good to see you today.
Thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be here, and I find it an elite operation or opportunity for us to share the information that we've implemented here at the bank to help others.
Well, we appreciate that expertise for sure, Marcia. We also say hi today to Kristen Keene from Rethreaded. And if you're not familiar with Rethreaded, the organization began with a really simple idea and a strong passion from its founder, who is Kristen Keene, located in Jacksonville. She got things underway by forming relationships with women on the street and making prison visits, and soon realized that the greatest need was for a safe and supportive work environment where the women could earn money while learning a skill and experiencing continued healing through community. And their work is very much survivor focused and driven. We welcome you to Perspectives, Kristen. Thanks for being a part of it.
Thanks for having me.
And from our own Leon County Sheriff's Department, let's welcome Detective Hannah Perry. And she is Sheriff Walt McNeil's designee for a brand new initiative within LCSO. She is part and parcel of a new anti-human trafficking initiative within the sheriff's office that will be focused on this situation. And Detective, thank you very much for being part of the program as well today.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And of course, this would not be possible in any way, shape, form, or fashion without the involvement of Robin Hassler Thompson, Executive Director of the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center. It focuses, in case you don't know, on the prevention and awareness of human trafficking in all of its iterations. Robin is a consultant, attorney, and a 2021 winner of the Oasis Center for Women and Girls Trailblazer Award. Robin, Happy New Year, and thank you for again bringing such an all-star conglomeration of folks to Perspectives on this issue.
Thank you, Tom. It's wonderful to be here with you. And again, so much gratitude to you and to Perspectives and WFSU for having this program.
Okay, let's kick it off here. Where do we stand in regards the current status, if you will, of human trafficking? During this pandemic era, has it mitigated what we know has been a really serious problem? Has it exploded and kind of gone underground because of the pandemic? What's the deal?
Well, I can start off the conversation and let you know that in terms of our experience at STAC, or the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, we saw at the very beginning of the pandemic that our caseload tripled. And what we saw was there was a kind of explosion in certain ways, Tom. For example, we started to see victims of domestic violence come forward because they were being trafficked, sex trafficked by their partners, for example. We also saw that because traffickers take advantage of crises, and the pandemic is a crisis, and it's an economic crisis, that more people who were vulnerable before are even more vulnerable, and people were made vulnerable by the pandemic. And when that happens, then you see traffickers in their very, wily and manipulative ways groom people into situations with promises of a good job, a roof over their head, whatever they need because of that vulnerability. So we've seen it increase in our area. And we've also heard from the national hotline that the exploitation of people who are essential workers, particularly in the agricultural industry, also exploded nationally, as well as sex trafficking online. So, I mean, we could take the whole show and talk about how the pandemic has made it worse and has made it people more vulnerable to being trafficked. But I just noticed that Kristen was nodding her head, and I'm wondering if you've seen that in Jacksonville as well.
Yeah, we had an increase as well. And, you know, we had so much economic uncertainty for the 2 years, but we do employment for women. So we directly employ women and then we give them access to services. One of our women shared with us, like, we were debating, like, do we hire now? Do we wait? And one of our women shared with us, she said, whenever there's a crisis, she goes, the violence towards me always increased. Like, she had experienced a hurricane when she was in the life, and she said, we're going to hire now. And we took her advice and we hired 8 women. It was our largest hiring class that we've ever had, hired at a time, because the need was so great, and women and everyone was shut down for services, and we happened to be open because we were making masks. So yeah, we saw the same thing.
And while we're talking to you, Kristen, if we could ask from ReThreaded's point of view here, with the phenomenal need that so many businesses and organizations have right now for staff, has that given more opportunity to ReThreaded and its clients for placement within the general work population?
Yes and no, because when a woman comes out of trafficking, a lot of times she has a criminal background, no work history because she's been in the life. Usually a lot of our women have come out of addiction, and then 100% of our women come out of severe complex trauma. So even if they try to go get a job, if they haven't been safe and had a safe place to heal and gain skills, the opportunity for a job is sometimes not. It doesn't matter, because when you're in severe complex trauma and you don't have any work history, it's really hard to find a job, first of all, and then it's hard to keep a job just because your life is in chaos. And if you don't have access to a new community and a new job, surrounded by a new community, there's an 85% chance you'll go back. So part of what ReThreaded provides is the community for women to come into once they leave, and they're surrounded by, we support each other, encourage each other, have access to services.
Yeah, so this isn't just a logistical challenge. This is a protracted healing process you're talking about.
What all the studies say is it takes about 2 years to heal from severe complex trauma when you have good access to good care and a good community. So we have women stay with us for at least 2 years and work with us. Because we see it, we can watch kind of healing from the outside, and in the first 6 months to a year, the women are just trying to like manage life and navigate all these new things and drug court and their license and their kids and jobs and trauma and addiction and all these things. And it's not even until they're usually at least a year out working at ReThreaded for at least a year that they're able to like start to really dig in and get job skills and do the deeper healing and the deeper work.
Marcia Crowell, let's get into the nuts and bolts here on the financial side here, and not just Capital City Bank, but any kind of financial institution. What is the involvement of a bank or a similar kind of organization with human trafficking? What's the connection here?
Under the Bank Secrecy Act, all banks are required to report suspicious behavior regarding any type of illicit behavior. And so illicit activity through unusual behavior. So with that, illicit activity would include human trafficking. And when I joined the bank 3 years ago, I became aware that Florida is the third highest state for human trafficking. In my past, I was in New Orleans and was involved with several human trafficking situations there. So I have a passion for it. So in order to carry forward the effectiveness of my past programs, we implemented controls within the bank to itemize and recognize activity that would represent suspicious money movement that could be tied to human trafficking. As we've identified that, legally we have a responsibility to report that activity, but we noticed the uptick in the last few years. And with that, we knew that there was possible elder exploitation, human trafficking, whether it be labor or sexual human trafficking. And so as I saw the uptick, we felt that it was imperative that the front line of the bank be educated on what they could be seeing at the teller line or in the lobbies that would indicate possible suspicious activity and bring it back to our office for analysis and possible reporting. It has been very effective. The training was very effective for the front line, because what the front line would have seen as possible just a little odd, they then were able to recognize the behavior between party A and party B or party C, D, and E out in the parking lot. And when somebody is under duress, even though they could be silent. So a lot of the activities that Robin shared with us and the red signs, the red signals that can like tip you off on what could be possibly suspicious has been very helpful. We have unusual activity referrals that come in throughout our entire footprint regarding possible human trafficking. And then the systems we have in place help recognize funds flow that would be supportive of human trafficking.
So you're looking for little indicators, whether it is someone who comes in to do a transaction with a teller and they seem... your spidey sense tingles, something is off, something is not quite right, or there are large amounts of cash only transactions that are being made. Just those sorts of awareness things that can help to bring in law enforcement and try to break up these kinds of activities.
Yeah, and that activity can now include a lot of the virtual currency possible that would be in Bitcoin. It can include electronic transfers, such as person-to-person transfers that are usually anonymous, but we have technology now to figure out, is that usual? Is it expected for this client or not? I think one of the most endearing stories we had was somebody worried that there was a grandmother that was possibly having overbearing control over a grandchild, and it ended up being a possible human trafficking situation. So there are true stories coming out of our bank. No matter how sad we are very positive about being able to recognize it and report it.
Because otherwise it just continues on. And that gets us into the law enforcement component then. And Detective Hannah Perry, again, talk about the genesis of a new enforcement unit within the Leon County Sheriff's Department to address human trafficking. How did that happen?
Well, excuse me. We have recognized that this is a global issue and it's a local issue and it's happening everywhere. And, you know, Sheriff McNeil and everybody has decided, look, we really need a specialty unit with detectives who are dedicated to working these cases. And working with the banks and working with the citizens and saying, you know, what are these red flags that are popping up? And what are, you know, because we typically get involved once a citizen files a complaint that is suspicious. They're suspicious. Yeah, this isn't right. This is, I think something else is going on here. And that way we can get involved and start investigating. And, you know, there's a need in local, you know, Leon County, Florida, the whole United States, there's a need for a dedicated unit, at least at Leon County Sheriff's Office, that we can really utilize, we could utilize and really work on these cases and taking them head on, because they do take a lot of resources and collaboration with multi-agencies, and these aren't small cases and they're not small things that are happening. So there's a huge need for the resources and, you know, to start a unit.
Yeah. In contrast to so many other kinds of criminal activity, be it, you know, equally terrible things like domestic violence and all that, which may only involve a very small number of people, you may be looking here at literally international connections with some of these cases, right?
Correct. And a lot of these cases of human trafficking or labor trafficking, sex trafficking, they stem from domestic violence cases or other violent crimes or fraud related crimes that turn into, oh, we think there's something else, and immigration violate. I mean, it can be any sort of other crimes that it really, yeah. And these cases become very big. There's a lot of players involved. There's a lot of traffickers. There's a lot of victims. I mean, it easily turns into large scale cases.
Yeah. And how many resources you're going to have, at least initially, at the Leon County Sheriff's Office to handle it? Yourself, certainly heading up the unit, but do you have other folks within the Sheriff's Office that you can call on to be part of this?
We are working on that in terms of asking legislation for the appropriate number of positions for the unit, and saying, hey, we need these sort of positions and we need a group to be able to be dedicated to this. So it's in the infancy, so I can't, you know, say how many is right now, but we are working on getting those positions and those resources in terms of, and then working with, you know, coming up with a network of people and other agencies. So we're kind of in the infancy, but we're working on it.
Yeah, well, we'll probably expect to see Sheriff McNeil and other folks from the Sheriff's Association hanging out down at the Capitol to kind of encourage that kind of resource generation, I would imagine, since the session is kicking off here within a matter of days. Robin Hassler-Thompson, that sounds like certainly a positive development. You've been talking for years about how a community has to have essentially a full court press utilizing multiple organizations and resources to really get a handle on and to knock down human trafficking at its source. So what's your reaction to these kinds of developments?
Well, we and everyone also at the Big Bend Coalition Against Human Trafficking, I need to mention BBCAT as well, we're thrilled because we've had that mantra of it takes a village for a long time. You know, it really does. It takes the next door neighbor looking outside their window and making a call. And it takes people like Marsha Kroll and the tellers at banks and other financial institutions to raise a red flag about something, because, you know, as we are talking about, human trafficking takes place in a larger context of society, and there are so many ways that it and reasons why it happens. And as we talked about the pandemic, that's always there to even make things worse. So we're grateful, so grateful to everybody in the community, and happy to be reaching across the panhandle to Kristen and having, you know, the involvement of ReThreaded. This month in particular, we're grateful also to Leon County, because we're launching, if I can talk about it, can I talk about the business thing? So last July, Leon County Commission funded an initiative for STACK to create an online training for businesses for all workplaces around. And that's why, Kristen, too, it's so great that you're here, and Marsha, you're part of this. is to really tell the business community, you are the eyes and ears on the ground. People who go to restaurants, people who run restaurants, who are in banks, who are in hotels, who are in office spaces, who are in convenience stores, who are any place in our community, in a workspace, it is possible you will encounter a victim of trafficking. Or say you run a hotel or a retail store, you might unwittingly be seeing or hiring third-party trafficked labor. And what do you need to do and know as a business so that you are protected, so you're not sued, but more than that, that you're doing the right thing and identifying possible human trafficking situations. So we have a website, it's called stackpro.org, S-T-A-C-P-R-O.org, where we have right now, we're taking pre-registrations and we'll have a free online on-demand training for all businesses in our community and anyone who wants to take it, but geared to Leon County so that businesses can know more what to do. And then taking the long view, we're hoping that these businesses are going to be the same kind of places that can hire survivors of sex and labor trafficking afterwards. We've talked with Marcia already about how banks can be instrumental in helping survivors restore credit because often traffickers force them to open up credit card accounts, checking accounts that they take over, ruin their credit, ruin their ability to get a license or a position. So, you know, it's a long-term impact, but really the business community stepping up is a huge thing. And we're grateful to the Leon County Commission and Commissioner Rick Miner, who was on the show last year talking about this, if you remember.
I do indeed. And that was exciting then. And now to see it actually come to fruition is even more intriguing as we move forward on this. But while you were name checking Marcia Kroll, let's talk about that. And one of the challenges, of course, that we have not only in the financial services industry, but in just about any kind of endeavor nowadays, is that so much of it has become, if not totally automated, substantially automated. And so when someone needs to go and do a credit repair because of a situation like you just mentioned, Robin, that someone else took over their account and totally trashed it. Marcia, how does the banking industry have the capability of responding, especially now with so much online and fewer people actually working face-to-face with customers in a lot of instances?
I think in Kristen's area of those victims, their accounts weren't actually electronically taken over. They were coerced in opening up accounts and forced to take action, of which then the individual that was in control of them abused those accounts. And so in that scenario, what's important is that Kristen and Robin and Hannah and I partner so that we can create a response plan to these individuals that Kristen is aware of. And then we can counsel the victim and be able to look at their scenario, be able to help work with them, know that in a credit situation, you can deny that you were responsible for such behavior. And under Reg B, banks have to take specific steps in order to cure those accounts that they were coerced to open. So those would be a victim situation. I think it's really important that's why the financial institutions and the entire industry need to get behind these victims, because we need to be a part of the solution for their future and not handicap them any more than they already have been by their captors.
Terrific. Well, Kristen, I think this is a great opportunity for you to perhaps walk us through what actually happens when someone who has been, as you put it, in the life comes to an organization like yours, Rethreaded, and needs to get their life back on track, and you folks start marshaling the resources to make that happen. Just give us that scenario. What does that look like? How do you get your clients, and what do you do once they contact you?
This is one of my favorite things about Rethreaded, is that it's women paving the way for other women. And a majority of the women that end up at Rethreaded were referred to women that are already at Rethreaded and have experienced healing and strength. And they will go back and bring women to Rethreaded that they know are still in the life. And that's our biggest referral source, is other survivors bringing in their friends. So usually when they come to us, a woman has to have had, we're like step two, like they at least usually around 6 months of sobriety and 6 months of some kind of stability in her life. So we work with a lot of drug rehab programs in our city. And we assess what their support group is, what their readiness is. Then there's a mental health screening to assess what their mental health needs are, a job interview. And then they're plugged into our company where they're interested in, where their skill set is and where our need is. And they get plugged in. And then once they're plugged into Rethreaded, we have access to weekly mental health counseling that we fund, and then weekly group counseling, and then weekly care management meetings. And then they're actually working on the job in the business. So we seek to be a trauma-informed workplace to create the safest, most encouraging work environment. And then we walk with women. That's the cool thing about Rethreaded, is that we're working side by side with each other to make sure Rethreaded's successful. So it's, we're working with, which is my favorite thing. So we really get to know each other. We're really involved in each other's lives, and together we're pushing Rethreaded forward so more women can come into Rethreaded and start a new life.
Well, you folks are headquartered in Jacksonville. Are there any Rethreaded clones, and how many organizations are there like yours that provide a comparable level of service to other communities?
There's a couple. I mean, Thistle Farms is in Nashville, Tennessee, and they're an amazing, and we partner with a lot of, so our business model is we're a purposeful gift company. We sell gifts, and we buy from other companies who are doing what we're doing. So there's like six other companies in America, and probably around the world, there's like 30 or 40 companies who are doing this that we know of. I'm sure there's more that we have not reached yet, but it's a very different model. So we run a business and a nonprofit, all in the same thing. So there's challenges that come with that, but we also get to see great success. So we're sticking with it.
At any given time, how many clients do you usually have, that you're working with?
Well, for the past 10 years, we've been in 2,800 square feet, and we grew our capacity as a business where we could hire 15 women at a time. And we've just moved into a new facility in November. We had our grand opening. It's now we're in 36,000 square feet. We've quadrupled our capacity to the point where we can hire 60 at a time. We cannot hire 60 women right now because we cannot afford to employ 60 women, but the goal is now over the next 10 years, we grow our company, and we'll be able to help 500 women in direct employment over the next 10 years.
But safe to say that the need probably outstrips the capability you have to respond right now.
Yeah. I mean, especially like what Hannah was talking about and Robin, like it's a complex issue that is on many different levels, and it has to come from partnership. Like, we're the work piece, and then we partner with probably 60 other organizations to help our employees get access to what they need to move on, to move forward. And then the complexity of human trafficking cases, some of our women have been through in their experience in the court and the police. I mean, it's nothing is quick.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. But Detective Perry, if we can get you in on this too, talk about that, I guess, the rehabilitation from a legal standpoint when the victim is so often considered also the perpetrator when it comes to human trafficking situations. How does that take place? How do you disassociate the two so that the victims can really get a fresh start in life?
It's a really difficult thing because, as we learn in a lot of trainings that we've been to, is there's this ongoing statement of a lot of these victims don't know that they're victims. or they think that what's going on is, some of them think this is, oh, this is normal life and this is the way that things just are. And it's something that we, these, like Kristen said, these cases take a long time because we have victims, and we have, not speaking about specific cases, but in terms of having victims who don't wish to cooperate because they are afraid, or they don't wish to, you know, cooperate with law enforcement, or, you know, they're just very scared to come forward because of what they're dealing with. And it really is just one of those things that we have to work on finding connections in terms of who is this victim comfortable talking to, because, you know, we know that you're going through something that should not be happening and you're obviously scared, but if you don't want to talk to law enforcement, maybe you'll talk to somebody at STAC and be more comfortable talking to them and working with somebody, because, you know, we're all have a common goal. You know, we want to get them out of the situation. And the sheriff's office obviously wants to put these perpetrators in jail and put them there for a long time. But, you know, it's a long process of getting some of these women and men and children to open up and become comfortable so that we can do our jobs as well in terms of moving forward with criminal charges.
Well, that is, go ahead, Kristen, please.
I'm thinking of one of our women who, she was in life for 10 years. The FBI started following her case. So the detectives and FBI followed her for 4 years, building trust, building a case against her trafficker. And then the only reason why she was brave enough to finally testify was that her trafficker got put in jail. And she was reassured that he would be in jail for a long time. So then she felt free enough to come out and leave. And yeah, then starts the process. When she came out, she didn't even know have a word for human trafficking. She didn't understand severe complex trauma. She couldn't get a job. No one would hire her because of her background. Eventually she landed here and changed her life, and she's one of my heroes. But yeah, I mean, exactly what you were talking about. It was years of building trust and building the case. And then in the end, her trafficker was convicted of a drug charge and not even trafficking, because they knew they could stick that charge and not the other one.
Yeah.
And her credit was destroyed because he used her cards and all the things.
And, you know, I was going to say, one of the things too that we see in these cases is that there is help for victims who are arrested or who have some sort of criminal history. Through Florida has a really good expungement law. And one of the things we have in our state is a lawyer, several lawyers, and our own legal services of North Florida would take these cases and just clear someone's record legally. Again, it's a long process, but it can happen. But one of the things that I remember, the first things I read when preparing to do the training with you, Marcia, was the district attorney out of Manhattan that said, we really, really want to get banks and financial sector people involved in this, because if we get the financial records, it means that the victim does not have to testify often, because the paper speaks for itself. The trail of criminal activity, money laundering, you know, identity theft, all those things really can free a victim from having to be embroiled in a long criminal prosecution. So again, that's why it takes all of us working together to do that, to think, to be victim-centered, victim-focused, trauma, more than, and people say trauma-informed, we have to be trauma-focused at all times when working with the women and the men and the children, as you said, who are involved in this.
Okay, and Marcia Kroll, do you have the major credit firms on deck with this kind of thing? As we know, if you have a negative credit score, your life is essentially over. Can organizations like Capital City Bank and its partners in this endeavor get up with Experian and those guys and say, look, this is a person who went through all of these situations and they don't deserve to have a 521 credit score, okay?
And Tom, I think the energy behind this focus is just growing. Not that it shouldn't have been in place for years, but it's the partnerships that we're building here in Florida that will go to a national effort. But right now, it's someone who is caught in this scenario that's working with Kristen can approach a bank and say, this is the scenario. What consideration can you give to us to help start this person's life over? So it's going to be a very local consideration, and it'll be a community effort on behalf of the financial institution. But there's always a way to work with somebody who is in need of just a step up. Not a handout, it's a step up. What can you do to help these people get back on their feet? So are we going to end up on the national level? Absolutely, because this is a nationwide problem. And I'm very proud of Robin and all the partnerships here that are working together to truly make a difference. And this is in our neighbors, and these are in our communities in our state, but it's a nationwide issue that's going to continue to grow now that we have the attention nationwide.
And there's something called the FAST initiative, F-A-S-T, globally, that's out there as well. That's as if anyone's interested in that as a resource that would help survivors as well in this financial, you know, get back on their feet and really be able to thrive.
Terrific. Kristen, you mentioned something a while ago that fascinated me, how current clients of ReThreaded there in Jacksonville can bring in new clientele just because of the connections they already had through being trafficked themselves. One of the things that I know I have heard from many people when the subject of human trafficking comes up is that, you know, it's, you know, someone from Kuala Lumpur or China or Mexico or someplace else. It's no one that we know locally. It's none of our young people or even adults. And that is not true.
No, I mean, at ReThreaded, 100% of our women were trafficked in Jacksonville. And we've never worked with anyone who is not a US citizen so far, in our experience. And a lot of our women were born and raised in Jacksonville. So yeah, it's happening right here.
No,
and you know,
go ahead. Oh, go ahead, Rob.
For our community, Tom, I wanted to mention this, is that President Jim Murdaugh at TCC this month, on the 12th, as part of our Human Trafficking Prevention Month activities, is hosting an event at TCC. And when we met with President Murdaugh, he said point blank, we know this issue is facing and impacting our students who might be vulnerable to being trafficked. And those are both US-born and foreign-born students, same thing at FSU. But they're here, and they're we've heard about how students are living out of their cars, who are, you know, because they're unhoused, they are very vulnerable economically. The cost of higher education has gone through the roof. So there's all these reasons how they're vulnerable. President Murdaugh, in particular, this coming up January 12th, is going to be having a program on campus at TCC to help the TCC community. You know how great he is. I see you're smiling. And his team there is outstanding. Kimberly Moore is part of this. Dr. Cicely Brantley, all want to focus on how students can be aware of what human trafficking is, know how to spot it in their own lives, and then be able to respond and to help themselves or help one another, as well as to be aware of the tricks that traffickers use to lure them into situations.
There is certainly an advantage to having a former law enforcement official as the president of the local community college, for sure, Robin. And speaking of law enforcement, Detective Perry, we've talked so much about the victims of human trafficking, which is, of course, where the prime focus must be in this situation. But if you could talk about the people who make this possible, the bad guys in the human trafficking industry, if you will. Who the heck are these people?
You know, there's this kind of over this belief that these people are, you know, people working out of different countries, and they're huge drug lords, and they're, you know, this incorrect thing. I mean, the thing is they can be anyone. It can be somebody who is you know, it's could be a legitimate business owner who's doing something, and, you know, making a business look legitimate, but they're people who are, they're getting these victims and they're luring them into situations. Like I think what Robin said, with promises of a good job, a roof over their head, or maybe it's drugs, you know, they're keeping them around somehow, but they're, you know, they're, if they don't do what they're telling them to do, they're going to threaten them with harm or deportation or isolation. I mean, there's some sort of hold that they have. So it's really, these are the worst of the worst people. You know, it's, you're really controlling somebody, but, and these people are people that need to be put into prison for a long time. And they need to really, you know, it's really important to look for those red flags and, you know, recognize what's going on, because that, like I said before, these people are also usually involved in other organized crime, or they're, you know, involved with fraud related crimes or immigration violation. I mean, it's all kind of tied together. So these people are, you know, they're not good people, and
And bottom line, this is contemporary enslavement, essentially.
Correct. And it's like somebody else mentioned, there's multiple types. It's, you know, there's sex trafficking and there's labor trafficking. You know, victims can be anyone. The traffickers can be anyone. I mean, it's not like there's one specific target. You know, there's women, children, men that are trafficked, and then there's women and men who are trafficking. So it really is something that people out in the community need to keep their eyes open for, because, you know, you can't just think it's just one type of person or one, you know, it's really a lot of different people.
Well, as you know, no, go ahead, Ron, please.
I was going to say, Detective Perry, too, we've seen in our area parental and familial trafficking as well. So it can be very limited to just inside a family's, you know, the family structure. During the pandemic, we saw that, and we're quite concerned that the only cases of child abuse that were coming forward were really horrific in-home abuse of children that included sex trafficking of children. That, so people also sometimes have the misconception that you have to be crossing a state border or national border for there to be trafficking, and that's far from the truth. It can happen inside a single home, where we've certainly seen cases in our area where parents have trafficked their children for drugs or other reasons. So Detective Perry is absolutely right. It could be a gang member. It could be anyone. It could be in California, one of the first cases I heard about was this big philanthropist in Berkeley, California, was a horrific trafficker of women from his home country. And he pulled the wool over everyone's eyes. So this idea of trafficking is really something that, again, it's very broad and it's out there, and the exploitation is driven by greed. And you can know that greed can affect every single, you know, human being on this planet potentially. So, and this is one of the way it manifests.
Okay.
Hey, and Robin, remember when we were doing our training, our tellers thought that a pimp or a human trafficker would be somebody slimy and on the streets a lot. And, you know, I said, look at Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, I bring up that example so many times in our training to our tellers. No one would have thought somebody with his wealth would have been involved in something with that, plus with his associate involved. Mm-hmm. So you have men and women involved in this activity. And so that's one of my favorite examples. If you think you would know what that profile is, think of Jeffrey Epstein and his associates. And Robin, I have to drop off again.
I appreciate your participation, Marcia Kroll, so, so much. All the best to you and the folks at Capital City Bank Group. And thank you for taking the lead on what you're doing as far as promoting the awareness, not only within the industry, but to a wider audience as well. And we can't thank you enough for being part of the program today.
Thanks so much, Tom, and thanks to everyone else. And, you know, it's our passion, and it's nice to have these partnerships. So I appreciate it.
All the best in 2022, Marcia. Take care.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, folks, we only have a few moments actually remaining in the program, and we'd like to give everyone ample opportunity if you want to share any additional thoughts. And Kristen, you've been hanging there in the background during the most recent part of the conversation here. Talk about Rethreaded of Jacksonville as kind of a template for a larger rehabilitation effort within the country. How do you see what you do getting traction on a larger basis, and what do you think needs to happen in order to accomplish that?
Well, I think that the unique thing about Rethreaded is that it's a community-based intervention, and I know scientifically and then deeply in my heart believe that you can't heal outside of community. So it offers community, and we walk with each other to heal and overcome. So I think that's my encouragement to other organizations is women need a safe place to land and heal, and not people to do anything for them. These are the women I work with are the most strongest, resilient women I've ever known in my life. We just need to walk with and help create space for. So I think business, unless a woman becomes economically independent, she can't take control of her life. So we have to find ways to create opportunities for women to economically empower themselves. It's a part of permanently breaking the cycle of human trafficking is having economically empowered women. So we're not quite ready to go national yet, but just give us like 2 more years. We got to get in this building first and start this. We bought a candy company. We recently bought a toffee company. So we have to get that off the ground. But yeah, we get a lot of people asking us, how do you do what you do and how can we start it? So nonprofits are also sort of creatively think in business, like businesses, like how do we have a source of income? How do we provide practical job training, all that good stuff.
And Kristen, can I quickly tell people to go to rethreaded.com and look at all the cool stuff they can buy?
Yes,
as a shopper, I feel like it's my duty to do that on this call because there's some amazing things there. So definitely rethreaded.com, and we'll be sharing information about you on our website as well a lot.
Thank you, Kristen. And Detective Hannah Perry, some thoughts from you, not only on the enforcement side, but also the prosecutorial side. Do you believe that, judges and state attorneys and all these kind of folks are on deck to ramp up the kind of situation that you need to put more of these folks behind bars?
You know, I think these cases are so complex and there's so many moving parts, and it's almost showing the judges and the state attorneys how these people are all connected and how this is all going, and, presenting a case that, pulls from the bank records and pulls from, all these different entities and kind of allows us to form a case so that when we go to court and we can tell the state attorneys, tell the prosecutors, tell everyone, like, look, here's all this stuff that is going to help our case and putting this people away. And, it might have all started from a complaint from a citizen saying, this is a weird situation and I really think something else is going on. And I really think, that information is vital and in terms of bringing it to court, and just simple things like that can really do it. But I think we're taking a turn in terms of prosecuting and the judges and everyone. I think it's really, we're going to be proactive about it. And we're really going to go after these people and in terms of prosecuting them criminally. So we want as much as we can get in terms of what to present to court is really only going to help us.
Thank you for being part of it today. And Robin Hassler Thompson, you get the last word on this as we get ready to wrap up what has become kind of an annual get together when it comes to human trafficking and its impact in our area.
It sure is, Tom, and thank you. And just to let everyone in the community know that STAC is here, surviveandthriveadvocacy.org, to both provide direct assistance to sex and labor trafficking survivors, as well as to do the community education that this is part of and you're a part of, and we're so grateful. Again, you know, just many thanks to Capital City Bank and Kristen and Detective Perry and Sheriff McNeil, who has been on this for a while. This unit has started, but he has been in the trenches on this issue as well. So we're always grateful to him. But Tom, I want everybody to know, to Detective Perry's point here, that from today on through the end of the month, at the 27th of January, we're going to be having a slew of events here locally to do some training and education and really inspire people to action. We're past saying just awareness. We don't want just awareness. We want people to do stuff. So we want them to understand that there's a national human trafficking hotline. I mentioned the TCC event on the 12th. We are going to have a big event at the law school at the end of the month on the 27th on labor trafficking. The impact of human trafficking on campus. We're going to be talking to FAMU, FSU and FIU and TCC reps about what students can do, what professors, what everybody can do. So I encourage everyone to go to the surviveandthriveadvocacy.org website and our events calendar and check them out, please. We hope you can come. Most of these, if not all, will have a virtual attendance ability so you can attend safely. And we just hope we can see you at any of those events and throughout the year. And anyone who needs help, please, please get in touch with us. Our number is 850-597-2080 for direct victim focused trauma-informed support as well.
Robin Hassler Thompson, Executive Director of the Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, along with Detective Hannah Perry of the Leon County Sheriff's Office, Kristen Keene, the founder of Rethreaded over in Jacksonville, and Marsha Kroll from Capital City Bank Group. Thank you all for being part of our first Perspectives of 2022, produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Thanks to Taylor Cox, Paul Dam, Amy Diaz de Villegas, Tricia Moynihan, Lydell Rawls, and our Director of Content, Kim Kelling, as our executive producer, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Despite its many challenges, America remains a destination of choice for folks from all over the world, especially those fleeing violence and oppression. So next week, we're going to be talking with some Florida folks who are helping international refugees find a warm welcome and a brighter future in the United States and in our own neighborhoods. That's coming up on next week's Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. Take care.